Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. I'm Neil McCready. Today on the show, Ryan Brown joins us. He joined us a couple weeks ago to talk about week one of the college football season. He's with us again today to talk about week three. Take some big picture looks, talk about Alabama, Ole Miss, LSU, Auburn, some other games as well. And then we finish about 2 or 3 minutes at the very end talking about his favorite team, the Washington Nationals, the National League playoff race, that kind of thing. Before we get into the show, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. It's Highway 6 West in Oxford, right next to the Oxford Exxon. You can go there, get the 3-egg plate combo featuring Gold Peak coffee. And then, of course, they've got all of the meal deals, the $2 square meal, the $3 square meal, the $4 square meal. All of those are there. If you're hungrier than that, you can get the 12 crystal combo. 12 crystals, 2 medium fries, 2 medium drinks. Also, if you purchase a large drink, you are entered in the Sprite concert giveaway presented by Crystal for a chance to win concert tickets. All of that at the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call the number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and he'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. No haggling, no hassle. It's just nice and easy. You get your quote, and then the rest is up to you. You can shop that quote around, or you can go ahead and take my word for it and the word of so many other podcast listeners and take advantage of the great deals at Clark Ford. You get a great vehicle, great service, delivery options, all of those things. Corey wants to be your car guy, your truck guy. He'll take great care of you. You will love your new Ford product. I know I did and do, and you will also. So at the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden, and you'll save $500 on your already great deal. Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. Now let's go to Ryan Brown of WJOX in Birmingham. Talk about week three of the college football season. Ryan Brown, kind enough to join us. We're taping this late on a Wednesday afternoon. You'll hear it on a Thursday. Alabama and Ole Miss this weekend in Oxford. Auburn entertains LSU. Trying to think if there are any other like dramatic games that we're going to touch on. I know we're going to move ahead a little bit. I'm actually going to ask you about Vanderbilt and Notre Dame, but we'll start with Ole Miss and Alabama. I was telling you when I was testing the equipment that Chase has insisted that I use, I was telling you that it feels like in your state there in Alabama, where it is obviously people have just football fever, it feels like people are trying to force a storyline that I don't know that anyone in Ole Miss, anyone in Mississippi necessarily is really is really embracing. It feels like there's this desire to make this a shootout, a game that Ole Miss could win, a danger spot for Alabama, where I don't think anyone here really believes Ole Miss has a chance to win the game. It's more, hey, can Ole Miss improve enough defensively to not get embarrassed, and is their offense good enough to, you know, put up a pretty decent number against Alabama?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, because I was thinking coming into this game, this is a different look Alabama defense. It's not the dominant, at least it hasn't been so far. I mean, they played 2 games, but it's just not that dominant fly all over the quarterback, secondary shutdown, corner, you know, safety all over the field defense we've seen from Alabama. I think it will be, but it's not yet. So, you know, on that front, if I'm an Ole Miss fan, I look at it and say, yeah, this may be the most vulnerable their defense has been in quite a while. Not bad, but just more vulnerable than normal because of all the guys they had to replace in the secondary and the injuries they've already had, you know, guys that could pressure the passer. and you got these receivers and you got an NFL offensive lineman and you got a good quarterback that's probably got some confidence, you know, those are all recipes where you can score some points. But anybody I've talked to that's at all associated with Ole Miss fans says the same thing you're saying is like, oh, no. Don't feel like I got a chance. You know, would be happy to score in the 20s. Alabama might score a touchdown every time they touch the ball, though. I mean, there's like zero confidence. And normally that recipe I just gave you would give you some confidence. But I think people perceive Alabama's offense as so good right now that even what might be a suspect defense in Nick Saban terms, suspect defense isn't enough right now.
All right, so let's talk about that defense a little bit. You talked about it generally. I want to ask you, when I think about Alabama's defense, like you said, I always think about their ability to get to the quarterback, to disrupt the passing game. Their third down packages are always so creative. They just bring stuff at quarterbacks that they can't handle. They end up making mistakes. They score defensive touchdowns or set up touchdowns on defense. Where is this defense in terms of just their pass rush, their blitz packages, some of the third down stuff? Have they been tested enough to even have a clue as from an outside perspective as to how good this group will be on, you know, third downs?
Not really, because, I mean, Louisville had some chances in that first game, and Juwan Pass just, you know, he and his receivers just couldn't connect. And yeah, I mean, Arkansas State, man, that's a Sun Belt team. Nick Saban liked that game because of the way they, you know, the pace with which they play. And I think he felt like, you know, that would help him down the road. But, you know, it's been so difficult because of opponents and because of the fact that Alabama has jumped out to these leads so quickly behind Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, they were scoring quickly, and that defense just hasn't been put in a corner just yet. Now, you know, they've still had six sacks. I mean, they're still pressuring the passer, and, you know, I mean, that element is there. I think for this Alabama team, it's probably coming more from the inside. I mean, Raekwon Davis is a mountain of a human being. He is a difficult guy to move around. Isaiah Buggs is difficult. Quinnen Williams, who wasn't even really at the top of the depth chart, he was kind of considered a second teamer, has been terrific to start this year. Those guys have been at times unblockable. So a lot of it is coming from the inside. They haven't had the impact maybe quite as much from Christian Miller as they think, but it has caused them to blitz a little bit more. But there again, out of that secondary, you're dealing with some younger guys, so maybe you blitz them a little bit less and play them in coverage. So I don't know that Tosh Lapoy as yet has had his full arsenal of the normal blitzes you would see under Nick Saban just yet.
What about the corners? They're obviously going to get tested. A.J. Brown's as good as there is in college football, in my opinion, from what I've seen. D.K. Metcalf is very good. He's off to a very good start. DeMarcus Lodge didn't play last week in concussion protocol. He'll play this week. Braylon Sanders has been very good so far early in the year. You know, they haven't utilized the tight end yet. Phil Longo said earlier this week it's because it just hasn't been available. When teams make it available, they're going to hit it, that kind of thing. But just on the corners, they're going up against – you know, Brown, Metcalf, what do you anticipate there? Obviously, Ole Miss has tried to hit the deep ball a lot this year. They've had a lot of success with it. They've gone Tamu has been very good against the blitz, especially with the long ball. That's a big part of their offense. They'll obviously try to score, you know, quick strike on Alabama because you want to put points on the board. How do you sort of anticipate that matchup playing out?
Well, I mean, is don't be shocked to look up and see, you know, some of those receivers running open and have some busted coverages. That's something Alabama has struggled with. They especially struggle with it against Louisville, and Nick Saban was open about it. And, you know, to Saban's credit, he's one of those guys that always says, you know, as long as everyone is on the same page doing the wrong thing, we'll survive. It's when you've got one part of the team defense doing one thing, one part doing the other, we can't survive that. So, you know, that's where he gets frustrated, is when you've got one guy playing one coverage and another guy playing another coverage and those two things don't mesh. You know, Savion Smith and Trayvon Diggs have been really, really good on that corner spot. Patrick Surtain Jr., who was a highly recruited guy, looks like he's going to get more playing time this week. They've brought him in more on the nickel this week. So I think he's going to get a little bit more playing, or at least that's the reports from practice, is that he's worked more with the first team on the nickel. I think they're still trying to find, and I would anticipate you'd see them a pretty good bit in the nickel here, because I think they feel like they're going to face a lot of passes and not many runs. And I think they're still trying to find the combo there that they want to go with. But Trayvon Diggs and Savion Smith have been good. Shaheem Carter is the other guy that's there. Xavier McKinney and Deontay Thompson at the safeties are guys that I think Nick Saban really likes. But, you know, again, these guys, they're playing their third game as a unit. And I think that's just really difficult to do. I'm interested that Savion Smith has gotten more what appears to be first team reps, or excuse me, Patrick Surtain has gotten more first team reps in this week of practice, because, you know, that shows me either one of two things: either they haven't been happy with the way the star position is played in the nickel package, or they really like what they've seen out of him and they're trying to find a way to get him on the field more. And I think there was an expectation, Neil, that he might even start at the corner, at one of the corners this year, and he hasn't done that just yet, but I think that was kind of the expectation for Patrick Surtain.
All right, here's where Alabama's fascinating to me, because in the past, and they've had good quarterbacks, don't get me wrong, I mean, McCarron and, you know, McElroy and whoever, they've had guys, but they've never had this dynamic dude at quarterback the way that they have in Tua Tagovailoa, where he can make so many things happen with his arm and with his feet, but especially with his arm. They've had good running quarterbacks, Sims, Jalen Hurts. I mean, they've had guys who can beat you with their feet and beat you with their brain. But they've always been kind of, at least from the outside looking in, kind of game managers that can run the ball. They have these impact wide receivers, Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and these kind of people. And you know, it's just, hey, don't screw it up. Let's let our superior athleticism win. We're going to crush people on defense and just sort of suck the hope out of people and then kill them. That's always been sort of the Alabama, the way I've seen it from the outside. With Tua, it's a different deal, and they're actually kind of fun to watch because he can make so many things happen, and it feels like he's a total, and I'm sure Nick Saban loves it, but he feels like he's the complete opposite of the typical Saban quarterback. That, okay, here's the ball, man. Go win games, take chances, make it happen. Am I even close to right from the outside? It just feels, they feel more fun than they've been in the past.
No, you're spot on. It's to the point, Neil, that I found on our show, Alabama fans don't really know how to deal with this. I mean, they're kind of in new territory. This is almost, you know, I was telling you earlier, Alabama fans, and other fans don't want to hear this, but it's the truth, other fan bases, Alabama fans have become, I don't know, content with winning national championships. It just happens every year, right? Or in the hunt every year, and you're really good. You can win all these games, and a lot of them aren't even close. You might get one or two close games a year, but you just go drill people. And this has almost been a rebirth for Alabama fans, because this is such a different way of winning. This is not line up and run it right down their throats and make them submit early and then strangle them to death with defense until they start turning the ball over. That's the way Saban has won for years. This is a different look Alabama team. This is a team that, you know, Saban has always thrown to get the lead and run to protect the lead. I mean, that's always been his philosophy. Now he throws and gets the lead quickly. Like I said earlier, they score so quick and so early in these games that he's been able to get the lead really, really quickly. Here's the thing, though, that I think Alabama fans are excited about this Ole Miss game. They have yet to see Tua Tagovailoa play an entire game. Both games he's played so far this year, Jalen Hurts has played fairly early in the first half. Saban has worked him in. You know, in the Louisville game, it was almost played up like, hey, they're still battling for the spot. Everybody that watched the Louisville game knew there was no battle. So then he brings him into the Arkansas State game and lets him play a little bit to get it. I think honestly, to get his confidence, because he was so bad in the Louisville game. But I think Alabama fans anticipate in Oxford, at least until the game is in hand, if it is, you're going to see Tua Tagovailoa start to finish, and that's what they've been dying to see. Neil, they would have put up 700 yards easy on Louisville if he had stayed in that entire game. If they had let him play against Arkansas State, Alabama would have had 700-800 yards. That's the type of offense we're talking about. They could easily, against a lesser defense, put up 700 yards with this offense.
Well, I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a team that came into Oxford this past Saturday. Powerful. Powerful outfit, one that
the Salukis.
Yeah, the Salukis. You know, I don't know if you've heard, but we'd heard that when the Salukis roll in, all no holds barred. They, you know, that they would
Yeah.
Dude, they ran up 630 yards of offense against Ole Miss. They ran up 380 some odd yards of offense against Ole Miss in the first half. They didn't punt until the third quarter. So here's my question, and you've watched, and you watch a lot of football, and I know you probably didn't study Ole Miss and Southern Illinois all that much, but you watched Ole Miss Texas Tech some. If Tua Tagovailoa plays the whole game, and Alabama kind of opens up the proverbial playbook, if you will, is there any way at all that the Ole Miss defense that you've seen stops Alabama at all?
My anticipation, if that played out, if Nick Saban said, okay, we're going to let him play. I mean, we're not going to try to restrain him. I'm not just going to worry about burning clock. We're going to let Tua Tagovailoa play. And he played the whole game. Based on what I have seen, I would anticipate 600-plus yards and 50-plus points. That would be my anticipation. That doesn't sound like many stops there. I don't think there are many stops there if you get 600 yards and 50-plus points. But based on what I've seen, that would be my expectation. That there was never going to be a time where Saban just said, hey, we're going to burn clock and shorten this game. We're going to limit Ole Miss possessions. If he just lets Tagovailoa play, that would be my anticipation.
See, it's kind of my anticipation.
Could be wrong, maybe.
It's kind of what I expect, Ryan. I expect that Tua's going to play the overwhelming majority of the game as long as Ole Miss is within, I don't even know what striking distance would be, 20, 25 points. I mean, I just think he stays in the game. And if they open it up, I mean, have you ever seen a bigger disparity in production from an offense to a defense as the one you see at Ole Miss? Going into this game, Ole Miss is eighth in the country in total offense, 123rd in the country in total defense. Have you ever seen that much disparity?
No, I mean, that's pretty remarkable. That's almost, I mean, that is almost – I would say Mike Leach, but, you know, there was that year where Mike Leach and Muffin McNeil as the defensive coordinator. They were pretty good defensively. But it's almost a Mike Leach – that one is shocking to hear. You know, one of the guys I do my show with, Lance Stewart, said – I think it was they we were talking about that. And he said, you know, the one thing I'll say about Ole Miss is they've actually seen – second half of both of those games against Texas Tech and against Southern Illinois. And I said, might I point out that they had to make halftime adjustments against Southern Illinois? I mean, that's an indictment in itself.
Well, and what's fascinating about that.
You said, you know, I probably didn't pay much attention to that.
What's fascinating about that, Ryan, is that they said they didn't make halftime adjustments. They said they didn't change anything. They didn't change the calls. They just talked about effort and intensity and focus, and really it's been a bad look. It's been a fascinating week on the beat, because if you take those words, those statements at face value, it is an indictment on the defensive coordinator, on the defensive staff. It is an indictment of those kids, because it says that you could not get them to amp up their effort until halftime. You had to wait till halftime to get in their face, if it's that simple. And if that's not true and you made some adjustments, it is an indictment that it took you until the half to make the adjustments necessary. And even in the second half, Southern Illinois accumulated 250 yards of offense and got 5 yards per play on the ground. I mean, it's not like they stifled them and just stopped them. Southern Illinois still rolled a lot of yards up in that game.
That is puzzling. There's no doubt about it, because I did think that was one of my takeaways from week one with Ole Miss and Texas Tech, was that second half defense by Ole Miss seemed to score 10 points in the second half. And I thought, okay, you know, Ole Miss, they were kind of one of the stories. I was blown away. By what happened Saturday with Southern Illinois. The first time I saw the score, it would be kidding me. So I flip over, and I mean, it was crazy what went on in that game. You know, and I just got to think, you know, I look at it this way, this the best offense Alabama has faced thus far this year? I don't think there's much doubt. Yes, I think Ole Miss is the best offense Alabama has faced. Have they faced better defenses? I don't think there's any doubt that they've already faced better defenses. And then I flip it around. Offense and defense will face this year. So to me, when I look at the matchup that way, it everything points towards Alabama big in this thing, just based on those two things.
All right. Give me a score. I haven't put mine out in, I guess by the time people, well, I'll put it out late Thursday. What's kind of your, have you made a prediction on the score yet? And then over under punts for Alabama. If the over under is 1.5, do you go over or under on punts?
Oh man, that's a great question. 1.5. I think I would take over. I think I'll go 2 punts. I mean, at some point you're going to throw a tip pass. So I think I would take the over 1.5 punts at 2. And if I had to set a score right now, I think I would go 52-24.
Yeah, it's pretty close to what I'm thinking. That's in the ballpark of what I'm thinking.
4. Yeah. Would be the, yeah, that'd be the score I'd say. Yeah. That'd be the score I'd say, yeah.
Okay, the game that I think is more,
I mean, real quick, the total is, I mean, as we talk, I would have told you, and it probably will go higher in Vegas. So 52-24 really isn't all that crazy. I mean, that's right about where Vegas, and that's 76 points, right? That's right about where Vegas says. You think that's that crazy a score?
No, I think that's about right. I mean, look, I think when people say Ole Miss is going to score a boatload of points, like I had somebody tweet at me just a little while ago that Ole Miss is going to put 40 up. I don't think so. That's a lot of points. I don't think people realize how many points 40-plus points are. That is a lot of points. If you told me that Ole Miss scored in the high 20s,
yeah, high
20s, I'd buy it. Maybe even low 30s. And quite frankly, I mean, if you told Phil Longo and Matt Luke that, hey, you got 31 points against Alabama, that's a hell of an offensive effort against Alabama. Not many people do that.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, if you put 30.
No, you're right.
You know, 31 points, that's why I tell people when they say this could be an upset. If you ask me the max points for Ole Miss, I'd go 35. 35 is just maxing out in my mind. And in my mind, that's not enough points to win the game.
No, I don't see half. Game we've seen him in relief or as a starter, I don't see Alabama scores 35 points. I mean, that would require him to have a bad game. And look, we haven't seen that from him yet, maybe. And he, listen, I'll say this about Tagovailoa. He threw what should have been an easy interception to Arkansas State. They dropped it. He's got a propensity to throw a pick every now and then. I mean, he's not perfect.
Yeah, it's you know, it's fascinating.
Beyond that, like, Hurts had one interception last year, and everybody says, "What's that?"
No, I was just going to say it is kind of fascinating that that Tua has played as little as he has played, and there is already this expectation of the standard that he has to live up to is perfection. He is going to make some young quarterback mistakes. He is a human. Yeah. He is a human being. He is a young quarterback. He is. He's an elite quarterback, and he's very, very good, and the sky is the limit for him. But he is a young quarterback who is going to do what all the great young quarterbacks have. Peyton Manning made mistakes when he was early in his career. I mean, all great quarterbacks make mistakes early in their careers. Tua's going to make – he is going to make mistakes at Alabama. He's going to throw interceptions. He is going to make a bad read. He is going to try to force a play too long, a beat too long, and hold the ball too long, and someone's going to knock it out of his hands. All of those things are going to happen to him at some point here in his sophomore season at Alabama. To me, there's just no doubt about that. And yet, there's this expectation and this standard that Tua Tagovailoa is going to be almost a perfect quarterback that I think is – it's really kind of unfair to the young man.
Well, but that's where he started. I mean, before he ever started a game, he was the Vegas favorite to win the Heisman. So, I mean, you know, I don't people's expectations. But now let me say this. He's met Alabama fans' expectations, which I didn't even know was possible. I mean, based on all the talk we had in the offseason on him, he has to be, that in itself is going to be difficult to do. So I'll credit him for that. But you know, last year Hurts had one interception, and people play that up as a positive. That was not a positive. Hurts had one interception because Hurts refused to take chances, rather than take a chance. And sometimes you got to take a chance. Sometimes you got to throw it downfield and get it picked just to back a defense off up a little bit. I mean, you know, you got to force it in every now and then. And so people would praise him for taking care of the ball with one interception. Well, there was a reason he only had one interception, and that's not going to be Tagovailoa. He's going to be a guy that's going to, he's going to have 6, 8, 10 interceptions this year, but I think he's going to have 40, 42, 43, 44 too. And I'll take that trade any day of the week.
All right, let's switch to Auburn and LSU. I think it's a fascinating game. It's my opinion, and I'm curious to get yours. It's my opinion that we're overhyping LSU's win over Miami. I don't think Miami is going to end up being the team that we all thought Miami was going to be in the offseason. And I'm not saying LSU's bad or that LSU's not better than we thought, but I'm not as ready to buy the LSU stock as I am, say, the Auburn stock. Auburn beat a very good Washington team in Atlanta. Auburn's defensive front may be as good as anyone's in the country. Stidham is a good quarterback. Auburn already has an identity, in my opinion. I'm not sure that LSU does. It's the line's only 10, and I'll be honest, going in, and maybe you can talk me out of it, I love Auburn minus 10 in this game.
I would never try to talk you out of that, because one of my biggest surprises out of week one was the reaction of Joe Burrow. I watched that game and didn't think they were any better at quarterback than Danny Etling. I did not think LSU improved one bit at quarterback.
Oh, I'll go hot take and tell you that they're – I'll go hot take and tell you they're not as good.
And you can tell me – look, Danny Etling got drafted by the New England Patriots, Neil. So, I mean from the draft pick on them. Last time I checked, Patriots are pretty good. They know what they're doing. But Danny Etling and Joe Burrow, to me, are a lot alike. I just didn't see any difference. And you could convince me it was my bias that LSU's always going to be bad at quarterback, and I don't like the Ensminger hire and all those things. So it was a rush to judgment. So I gave it another week. I think he was worse against Southeast Louisiana than he was against Miami. I don't know. They don't have the quarterback play to come in and beat Auburn. That's a good Auburn defense. And you've been to big games at Jordan-Hare Stadium. That is a near impossible place. And Joe Burrow is having to make his first road start in that environment. Boy, I don't see that at all. That to me is a recipe for disaster for them.
No, you can win at Auburn as an opponent, but you have to be the better team. It's really as simple as that. You can do it, but you have to be better than them, and you have to have the ability offensively to take their crowd kind of out of the game. You have to get ahead. You have to plant some seeds of doubt. It's like any other fan base, but that's one of those places where when they get going and they sense that they're going to get you, that place gets loud and it gets rowdy, and they do a really good job of. There's a lot of football IQ there. They know what they're doing, and they affect the game. This is going to be a real interesting game for Orgeron, for Ensminger, for Burrow. And look, I think LSU's defense is good, but Auburn offensively has a lot more athleticism and a lot more weapons than what Miami had. Miami didn't have the quarterback play that Auburn has. Yeah. You know, I mean,
nope.
Jarrett Stidham's played big games now. Jarrett Stidham's played Georgia twice. Jarrett Stidham's played Alabama. He's played Ole Miss and Mississippi State, and he's played these kind of, you know, games that are challenging games. And he's passed most of those tests. And he played Washington, and he's played Central Florida, all that stuff. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm being repetitive. I like Auburn, and I like Auburn pretty big.
something like 31-10. I just don't think LSU will move the ball on them at all. They're not as dynamic in the run game to me as they, you know, have been under Geis and Fournette. Auburn's so good defensively. That home crowd. Sure, anything. I'll tell you one thing that concerns me about Auburn. Number one, well, it's really one thing. I wouldn't even say receiver because they have shown to have a tremendous amount of talent. It's just young at receiver. Ryan Davis, game who missed because of injuries since they've been hurt since the spring. We'll see how much they play. So I think they'll be fine at receiver. The thing that worries me most about Auburn is the fact that they're at running back this year, and he's just simply not a three-down back. Cale Martin cannot run effectively between the tackles the way you have to in the Southeastern Conference. So I think eventually they're going to have to go with Bobby Whitlow, but Gus Malzahn slows. When a guy has won a spot, you know, Gus Malzahn, it takes a lot for him to make that change. I think they're concerned about Whitlow's pass protection. He's a young guy, and that's things that guys don't come to college ready to do. And Cale Martin was better at that, and that's why he won the job. But he's just simply not a three-down back in the Southeastern Conference. He's too small. He's too light. And if they will go to Bobby Whitlow, if they will go to Bobby Whitlow is a guy that, you know, I think it's got to be his job. I think they've got to go Bobby Whitlow here because Cale Martin, he's just too light. He's not a three-down back. He's a guy that won the job. And Gus Malzahn is slow to make those changes. But that's your three-down back there. They're concerned about him not picking up the pass rush. And that's understandable because he's a young guy and guys don't come to college prepared to do that. But if they will make that change, I think Auburn will be just fine offensively. I think they've got on the outside. If Whitlow is the running back, I think that's the guy that can be that 1,300-yard type rusher for Gus Malzahn.
Looking ahead, is what's funny, kind of jumping around a little bit. What's funny is that there's all the talk about with Ole Miss and Alabama. To me, the winnable game that remains very winnable for Ole Miss to steal a game that no one thinks they're going to get is not this one. It's the one in 2 weeks at LSU. I think Ole Miss could go to Baton Rouge and win. I think they have a real shot to go to Baton Rouge and win, in fact. I mean, I think there's a legitimate opportunity there where I see no opportunity Saturday. I see plenty of opportunity in 2 weeks. Nothing has changed about what I think about LSU moving forward into the season based on the first 2 weeks of the year, and I think Auburn's going to bear that out. So here's my question in a roundabout way. Texas A&M, if there's a surprise team early and it's based off of one game and it could potentially be a one-off game, but A&M gave Clemson all Clemson ever wanted last Saturday. Is it possible that between the emergence of Kellen Mond at quarterback and the presence of Jimbo Fisher as the head coach there, that A&M is going to make a kind of a giant leap forward a lot earlier than we all thought they would?
Well, it certainly felt that way Saturday night. I mean, when you're watching that game, Kellen Mond was a different person in the second half. And, you know, I'm going to want to see it more than one half. You know, I'm going to want to see it back-to-back games. And they come to Tuscaloosa, you know, next Saturday. So I'd like to see it on the road against a good defense, too. But I was surprised, man. And I was surprised at how well he moved the ball. That Rodgers kid at wide receiver is a beast. He called everything. So, yeah, I think there's reason to be optimistic if you're Texas A&M. But, man, if I'm an A&M fan, boy, I've ever been there before, where a quarterback comes in, looks like a world beater, and he can't do it back-to-back games. So I know that was Kevin Sumlin's regime. But as an A&M fan, I'm still going to hold it until I see a guy do it two or three games in a row. And as an observer at A&M, that's kind of the same way I feel. I do like what you said about Ole Miss and LSU from this reason. If Ole Miss can bait them into a track meet, that is the position where LSU is completely uncomfortable. And, you know, I mean, you would like to think LSU could line up and just run it right down Ole Miss's throat, but you never know if you get baited in. What's Steve Ensminger? Does he get baited into a track meet? And I'm going to take Jordan Ta'amu over Joe Burrow in that situation. So I think if Ole Miss, it's almost like basketball game. If they can dictate pace, then that could be a tricky game for LSU. I don't disagree with you at all on that. But I mean, to your question, if LSU's out of the way, and we'll see about State, you know, could Texas A&M be that team that could be poised with an upset over State even to be the third best team in the West. I don't know. I mean, they look like it for one half, but I have been burned so many times in September by Texas A&M that I'm not going to get burned again.
We take a break from our conversation with Ryan to tell you that this podcast is also brought to you by Community Mortgage. Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga, is 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So call and ask Jason about Community Mortgage's float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. And if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. Again, it's JLO, that's J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. The podcast also brought to you by Strategic Partners and Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here is why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing is done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. And lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian is a partner in the firm. So give them a call. See just how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Podcast is also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. A popular trip for visitors that don't have as much time is the inshore trips for speckled trout, triple tail, sometimes that's called blackfish. You can reach John through his website, TunaChaserCharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call him at 228-348-7800. 17. And we are brought to you by LB's Meat Market. LB's is located at 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, right across from Kroger, 662-259-2999. They've got the freshest cuts in Oxford, the bone-in ribeye. Tell you about it all the time. Filets, strips, the ground round, briskets, whatever you want, whatever cut you might want. Greg Jones and the people there at LB's, they'll get it ready for you. You're coming in for the weekend. You want to get set up for maybe a cookout on Friday night or something on Sunday after the game. Just tell Greg. He'll have it ready for you. Or you can go in and shop around. Check out the poultry, the pork, the seafood fresh from the Gulf. It's all there. They have a great selection of sausages. Fresh sausage, ribeye sausage, chicken sausage, the Swayze sausage, the Oxford Italian, smoked sausage as well. It's all there. There's also a beer fridge on your left. Grab a six-pack and tell Greg at checkout that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden, and you'll save on that six-pack. You'll get a six-pack of craft beers for just $6 there at LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford. Now back to Ryan Brown on the Billy's Pecans Hotline here on the Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. I know it was just Kansas State, and they're not good, and I get it. But man, Mississippi State was impressive in that game. They dictated everything from tempo to physicality. They got in their head. They got in the crowd's head. They 2 weeks in under a new coach, they have a ton of identity already. I mean, they clearly very much know who they are. And they can, it's about a team that can run it down your throat and can really beat you up at the line of scrimmage. It's Mississippi State. I don't know that they can throw it well enough to be balanced enough to beat Auburn, to beat Alabama. We're going to find out because they're going to get Auburn at home in a crazy environment. But State's really good. I mean, I kind of overlook them sometimes when I talk about Texas A&M this week. But State's the team that if you told me somebody went 11-1 in the West, not named Alabama or Auburn, I would say State.
I think I would agree with you on that, because if they can find a way, all of a sudden that Florida challenge, you know, that was a game out there for them. Like, okay, Florida in Starkville, it's going to be a lot of emotion with Dan Mullen coming back. They're so much better than Florida. So that, you know, that one doesn't bother me as much. If you find a way to beat Auburn at home or Alabama in Tuscaloosa, And those are tall orders. I would agree completely with that. The concern I have is obviously Fitzgerald is still just not a, you know, not an accurate passer. He just does not throw the ball down the field well. He does many good things for you, and they can run the ball so well. Here's what has impressed me. It's a strange thing, but what has impressed me the most about Joe Moorhead in his first year is he suspended his starting quarterback for the first game, and he has said Aries Williams, who is my quarterback, practice better to play. He has set him on the bench, and those things are hard to do, Neil, for a first-time head coach to discipline your star players and take playing time away from them. The you know, the risk is I don't really want to do that because I want to, and I will credit Joe Moorhead for doing that, man. That's two of his star offensive players, that one of which was suspended for one game, and the other one has basically been a non-factor, and Joe Moorhead has been very upfront about it that he's got to do what it takes during the week to play on the weekend.
South Carolina was disappointing against Georgia. How much of that was Georgia just being the elite dominant program that it's becoming, and how much of that was South Carolina sort of wetting the bed and, with an opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when Jake Bentley threw that pick six to go down 14-0, you could just feel the onslaught coming. And to their defense, they fall back, or to their credit, they fall back a little bit. But Fromm was just so good in that game. Jake Fromm is the least flashy, really good quarterback in the country. I mean, there's nothing he does that you're like, man, that is spectacular. But boy, is he good. And he's been pretty good the exception, really the obvious exception being at Auburn in the regular season last year. Other than that, he's played pretty well in the big games. And I mean, he was just so good. I don't know how much of it is Georgia being that good again. They're obviously really good. And how much of it is just South Carolina wasn't ready for that spot. It feels like it's a little bit of both, but man, I look at what happened on Saturday with Florida losing to Kentucky, Georgia beating South Carolina. How does Georgia not win the East? I mean, I know they've still got to play LSU and Auburn out of the West, and you know, they've still got their rest of their East schedule to go, but you try making a case for somebody else winning the East right now other than Georgia, and I don't think it's real easy to do.
Is there any way to even, and I know the answer is no, I'm just trying to kind of almost play devil's advocate a little, is there any way to make a case for Missouri? They get Georgia at home, they have Drew Locke at quarterback, and he looks awesome so far this season.
He does. You know, they have, I mean, you know, Wyoming's one of those teams that's, you know, probably a really good group of five team to play. I don't know how good they are this year, though. That's the problem. Craig Bowles a really good coach, the Wyoming coach. You know, for those who don't know, he's the guy that won all the championships at North Dakota State. He took the Wyoming job. He's a really good coach. But, you know, they lost Josh Allen, who's about to start for the Bills this weekend. And they just, I don't know that they've recovered. So I'm not sure this is a vintage Wyoming team. They haven't looked good so far this year. So I'm not going to put a ton of stock in that Missouri win. They're at Purdue this week. I'll be interested to see because it's not a good Purdue team either. This is 0-2, but it's a road trip. And I don't know. I'll just be interested to see what they do at Purdue. Are they looking past that one to Georgia next week? I mean, that's the one game. So, yeah, if you want me to make a case, Missouri's got to beat Georgia. I mean, you're not going to win the East if you're Missouri if you lose to Georgia. So if they're going to win the East, we'll know next Saturday night when they play Georgia. My gut tells me Georgia wins that game fairly comfortably. You know, Fromm is an experienced starter now going on the road, and I know it's on the road, but there are way more difficult places to play than Columbia, Missouri. But, yeah, it's an interesting game. It gets my
It'll get on one of your TVs there in your man cave. I saw your man cave. The remodeled man cave is really nice, by the way. Very impressive. I liked it a lot.
Well, thank you. My wife was very instrumental in it. We had someone hang the TVs for us and do all that. But the reclaimed wood look on the wall, that is all my wife and her love for Fixer Upper on HGTV. That's where all that came from. That was her Chip and JoJo. If you've ever watched the show, you'll know what I'm talking about.
That was her moment. Well, good for her. All right, not going to keep you much longer. I did want to ask you about a couple of games, believe it or not, that no one is talking about. And I'm a little interested. Florida's not good. Colorado State's not good, but Colorado State did just beat Arkansas, who's not good. There's a lot of not good is there any way Colorado State slips into Florida and makes that a game? And then the game that I'm really actually interested in, and I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, Vanderbilt's a little better than we all thought they were going to be, I think. And Notre Dame is always Notre Dame. They get all sorts of hype, yet at the end of the day, they're just Notre Dame. Is there any way Vanderbilt is in the game in South Bend in the fourth quarter?
Well, let's start with Florida-Colorado State, because Colorado State did beat Arkansas, which I think time will tell us that's the worst team in the conference this year. I think at the end of the year, we'll look back and say Arkansas, I think they'll be winless. I'm not sure they win this week. Now, they got North Texas. That's a tricky game for them this week. I think we'll look back at the end and say Arkansas is the worst team in the Southeastern Conference, and they completely collapsed to hand that game to Colorado State. I think it was 29-7 at one point in the fourth quarter, if I'm not mistaken, completely collapsed. So that was an embarrassing bad win for Chad Morris, just a brutal loss for him. Then Colorado State's got to come, you know, to the heat and the humidity of Florida, who's not as bad as Arkansas. I would be surprised if Colorado State gets that win. I'm with you. I don't think Florida's that good. I think they'll bounce back against Colorado State. Vanderbilt at Notre Dame is interesting only because, you know, we're in the post-Ralph Wells era now, the running back at Vanderbilt. And yeah, I was interested to see what they would do on the ground. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but against Middle Tennessee, it was like 178. And against Nevada, it was like 199. And alone, those aren't terrible numbers. Those aren't good defenses. I mean, I would like to have seen them rush over 200 yards in both those games. They don't have a running back that averages more than 100 yards a game. And you know that's good. Notre Dame, they completely took the run away from Michigan. They didn't as much against Ball State. They kind of struggled against Ball State. But that worries me for Notre Dame is that they're not going to be able to run the ball on Notre Dame. And now you're putting it all on Shermer's shoulders against a pretty good defense in South Bend. That's a tough spot for Vandy. I would be more than them if I felt like they could run the ball better in that game. I don't feel like they can run it that well, so I think they're going to lose this game.
All right, last thing on college football, then I'm going to get your quick thoughts on the Nationals because I'm curious what you think ultimately goes down there. Yeah, I know. I saved it for the end, so you can drown it in some. Yeah, you can pour some vodka into your own Arnold Palmer and make it a John Daly and get over it. All right, I know it's just 2 weeks in, is there one team that you've seen or two teams that you've seen that you say, hey, that team in a playoff setting against an SEC team is going to be a handful? Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Clemson. Is there anyone you've seen so far that you go, that they're a threat?
No, I mean, look, I've been impressed with what Kyler Murray has done at Oklahoma. Don't sell me on he's better than Baker Mayfield, though. I'm not buying that. Baker Mayfield was a generational quarterback, and you're not going to have – it just doesn't work that way. The odds say you're not going to have a generational player back-to-back year. So I think Kyler Murray, they'll get in a tougher part of their schedule. They'll get some of these Big 12 road games. I think he's going to come back to earth. But they're better than I thought they would be. I thought they would take a step backwards. They have looked really good for the first 2 weeks. So I wouldn't be as concerned about them. We've seen Washington go against an SEC contender. It didn't go well for them. We've seen Clemson go against a middle-tier SEC team after, you know, their embarrassment a little bit against Alabama last year. It didn't go well for them. So, you know, that's the thing I look at with Clemson is Alabama very much neutralized that Clemson defensive front. And to a certain extent, Texas A&M did too. Those guys all could be in the NFL, but two offensive lines have neutralized them pretty well. And that's an interesting because that's the strength of Clemson's team, so that's kind of interesting to me with Clemson. You know, I think Ohio State obviously would be the concern, and the way Haskins is running that offense. But then with Ohio State, I look, Oregon State ran up and down the field on them in game one. Their defense outside of Bosa looked like a sieve, and I just don't think that holds up well against Southeastern Conference teams. So, long way of answering that question. You know, Penn State, no, Michigan. You know, against a good defense was just so bad offensively. Michigan State has already lost at Arizona State. No, I've not seen one that I would say SEC champion would be in trouble against that team. I like the SEC, whether it's Georgia, Alabama, Auburn, whoever. I like their matchup against any of these big teams we've seen nationally so far.
Yeah, I think I agree. All right, I'll finish with this. Your Nationals swept my Cubs on Saturday. It made for a It made for a very angry angry day. I had a moment in the press box. Once again, I almost got in trouble getting upset in the press box. And for the third time in my career, it was about a baseball game. I was watching Cubs Nationals and just not understanding how Anthony Rizzo didn't field a ground ball. Not that it mattered against Scherzer. The Cubs and Nationals play Thursday afternoon. It looks like Major League Baseball is going to make the Cubs fly to Washington for a game. The Hurricanes apparently going to go south. When it's over, and this is when the season's done, do the Nationals even make a run at Bryce Harper after this, or do they say, "Hey, goodbye to an era. Let's build around Soto. Let's build around some of these other young people. Let's go in a new direction." What's the sense that you get? When it's all done in 2.5 weeks and the Nationals are finished with the season, what would have to be the most disappointing season of this era, where do you think they go?
You know, it's an interesting question because obviously everything they've done is to dump salary. So, you know, salary-wise, they're going to be in pretty good shape for free agents. You know, look, I mean, the question has to become, if not Washington, where does Harper go? You know, and all the big, normal, big teams are the ones that get named, including your Cubs. But if not Washington, you know, is it Chicago? Is it, you know, Boston? Obviously doesn't need him. Why would Boston spend that kind of money on him, right? The Yankees could use him, obviously, because they can't catch Boston with what they've got. So, you know, I mean, where does he? It's a handful of teams. Again, Philadelphia was the other one that's mentioned. It's a handful of teams that create that kind of money. Here's an interesting theory that a friend of mine, this is not some baseball guy, but this is a guy that knows the game, follows it closely, huge Dodgers fan. He told me about a month ago, he said, "Mark my word, Manny Machado ends up as a National." And I was like, I would take that. I mean, if you lose Bryce Harper, I don't want to lose Bryce Harper, but if you lose him and you get Manny Machado, I don't think you've lost that much, have you?
No. In many ways, I think you could argue that Machado's a better player.
Yeah. So if that is the end of this, you know, you thank Bryce Harper for his time, and you start the Manny Machado era, and I'm okay with that. And your left side of your infield is pretty good. Well, Machado at short, Rendon at third. That's a pretty good left side of the infield. You figure out what to do with Trey Turner, which maybe is play him at second since Daniel Murphy is a Cub now. Which, by the way, how much do you like him? He was one of my favorite Nationals. That guy, he is a ball player, great attitude. I love Daniel Murphy, man. I hated to see him go.
He's a butcher at second base, but his at-bats are as a Cub fan, getting to watch him and Ben Zobrist, and to some extent Anthony Rizzo in the same games, I'm trying not to take it for granted what good at-bats those are, one after the other after the other. They're not always productive, of course, but they're always very good grinding at-bats that you hope that young players are watching and observing and trying to emulate later in their careers.
Yeah, he's just a great teammate, too. I mean, he's a tremendous attitude. I love Daniel Murphy. But all that said, maybe with him going now, you move Turner to second or play him in the outfield somewhere. I think you could build a pretty good lineup if it's Machado. And you've still got Scherzer. I really wish, obviously, we had not paid Strasburg what we paid him a couple of years ago. But yeah, and that's the end of this. I think you've turned out okay. If you got rid of all that salary and you ended up with Manny Machado, I'm okay with that.
Last thing, you watch a lot of National League Baseball. None of these teams are all that good. They're really not. Like, the Cubs are so flawed, and the Brewers are kind of flawed because they're starting pitching sort of shaky, and they lean on the same two or three bullpen arms, and their defense is atrocious. The Braves are very good, but they're so young. The teams out west no one can distance themselves. If you had to put money on one team to emerge from the National League, because someone from the National League is going to play in the World Series, who would you pick?
Yeah, it's a rule, right?
I think it's the rule, yeah. We can't. I'd love a Boston-Houston World Series, but they're not going to let it happen.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I don't like any of them. I don't like any of them. But here's the thing, the of the last 25 teams to be the first team to clinch a playoff spot, which Boston just did, do you know how many of them have won the World Championship?
It's a small number.
The last 25, they just beat first team in.
It's a very small number.
Five.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, that tells you, as good as Boston looks, they're playing against the odds to win the World Series, to win the World Championship, or even make it there. I think only 12 of 25 have even, not mistakenly, half that have even advanced to a World Series. So sometimes it can be a curse getting in early, but man, I can't convince myself of any of these National League teams. The Rockies are an interesting team. That division. The Brewers and the Cubs are interesting. I just can't see the Braves doing it. They're just so young and inexperienced. So, man, I don't know. Flip a coin. Can I say Rockies? I mean, just say Rockies.
Yeah, the Rockies have as good a chance as any of them.
If they're going to win their division and make playoffs.
Well, I mean, they have a one-game lead. They have a shot, yeah, for sure. I'm with you. It's whoever gets hot, frankly. It's whoever pitches. I don't know. There's none of them are any good. I mean, I watch them all. I watch the Dodgers. They got blown up by the Reds all week. They finally won the last game of the series, but it's the Cincinnati Reds, for God's sake. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It'll be interesting. October always is, and then watch one of them get super hot and beat the Red Sox in the World Series, and I get tweets from people saying, you're an idiot, and I'll be like, yeah, well, I know. You're not an idiot. Thanks so much for the time. It's always fun to talk to you. I really appreciate it, and I hope you enjoy week three of the college football season.
That is my plan, as always. It's a pleasure to be on. I appreciate you putting up with me.
Talk to you soon, I hope. Our thanks to Ryan for his time today. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal. Maybe talk some NFL again. I've been promising kind of a baseball-related show. We'll try to get you one of those as well as the postseason nears, the pennant races wind down. Looks like the Braves are headed to the postseason, so maybe we can do something about the Braves, catch up with what kind of chances they have with this young team this year. Have a great chance down the road. What kind of chance do they have this year? We'll ask some of those questions perhaps as well. So until next week, again, our thanks to Ryan Brown. Thanks to you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next week here on the Beer Garden. Until then, take care.